Welcome to the world of Culture Pop with Steve Mason and Sue Kowinski. Culture,
comedy, movies, TV, tech, authors, trends,
pop.
This is the Culture Pop Podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Culture Pop Podcast. I'm Steve Mason. Thanks a lot for listening. Appreciate it a lot. And cool guest today, Larry King, who is an idol of mine. I could only wish to be doing this when I'm 86 years old, which is Larry's age. Coming up soon, and we probably should have figured this out by now, Sue Kowinski is going to be able to rejoin us on the podcast, my podcast partner. So we anticipate that we're going to do that in the next week or so. Got some really cool ones coming up. I'll tell you about those after my conversation with Larry. Want to tell you about Jacob Imrani. Jacob, thank you very much to Jacob Imrani, who is the sponsor of this podcast, and I appreciate that so much. It means a lot. He's a friend of mine. And right now, if you've got any kind of accident or injury, or maybe a case that's already out there pending, 24/7, Jacob Imrani is available to you. He is the best of the best. He has been doing this for over 20 years in Los Angeles. If you've got a case, and by the way, this is going on a lot right now, if you've got a case that has kind of fallen by the wayside and you feel like you're not getting the attention from the attorney that you deserve, and it feels like the case has just fallen off, call Jacob. Get a second opinion. 844-24-JACOB. That's 844-24-JACOB. We all need something reliable right now in these crazy times. Something, someone that you can count on, and that's Jacob Imrani. 844-24-JACOB. That's 844-24-JACOB. Or remember the catchy jingle, accident or injury, call Jacob Imrani. Call Jacob.
Accident or injury, call Jacob Imrani. Call Jacob.
Hey, it's Mace. If you or a loved one is injured in any kind of accident, please don't wait. Call Jacob immediately for a free consultation. That's right, free. When an accident happens, it can turn your world upside down. So put the best on your side. Jacob doesn't even get paid unless you win. First name, first thought, first call, Jacob, Jacob, Jacob. After an accident, 24 hours a day, call 844-24-JACOB or visit calljacob.com.
Call Jacob.
My guest is a broadcast legend. He has been on radio and television for over 60 years, from local DJ in Miami to late nights on radio to 25 years at CNN, and he is still doing it. 40,000 plus interviews to his credit. He's won the Peabody 10 Cable Ace Awards, and he is in the National Radio Hall of Fame. Larry King joins me. Larry, thanks so much for doing this.
Steve, pleasure to be with you.
So I'm curious, as a kid, you grew up with Sandy Koufax. What was he like?
He was very quiet. I was 2 years ahead of him in high school. He was modest as he is now. He was Sandy. He was Sandy. He hasn't changed. One interesting thing, Facet, was not generally known, is that he wasn't a good baseball player. He was a backup first baseman on Lafayette High School team. He was a starting pitcher, but he was so wild that they only used him on special occasions. I mean, he'd warm up as skating at a team. I mean, he couldn't find the plate, but he was a great, great basketball player. He played his freshman year, broke a lot of scoring records, and then that winter, he was pitching in a summer league. They played in the winter, and the Dodgers saw him and signed him based on his speed. He couldn't find the plate, but when he did, wow.
So like me, you started in radio. I was an overnight DJ in Toledo, Ohio. You were a DJ in Miami starting in 1957. What do you remember from your very first shift?
Oh, remember my first day, I was so scared. I always wanted to be in radio. I never had any other wish. Didn't want to be a cop, didn't want to be a fireman. When I was a kid, all the kids' wishes were those occupations. I wanted to be an announcer. I used to imitate announcers I was enthralled with radio, and a friend suggested I go to Miami. I didn't go to college, did a bunch of odd jobs. My father died when I was 9. Mother never remarried. So I went down to Miami, knocked on doors, station hired me. And my first day was May 1st, 1957. Always remember that day because I just celebrated it, 63 years.
Wow.
On the air. That morning, I was going in. I had my records all planned. I was going to be a disc jockey, $50 a week, from 9 to 12 in the morning. And then in the afternoon, I would do news and sports. So I reported that I'm ready to go on the air, and the program director said to me, what name are you going to use? And my name was Larry Zeiger, and you could do that now. But then he said, no, it won't play. You need another name. And he had the Miami Herald open, and there was an ad for King's Wholesale Liquors. And he just said, how about Larry King? I said, okay. Then I go in, and the record's playing. I can't think of a thing to say. I'm scared. The program director kicks open the door and says, say something. This is a communications business. And what I did was, that morning, Steve, I opened the mic, said that I just got my new name, Larry King, said that I wanted to be in radio all my life, said that I was nervous, said that the program director just kicked open the door to the control room and told me to speak. And I told the audience the whole truth about the morning. And I never was nervous again, ever. Not on television, not ever. Because I always knew what happened to me that first morning is true in life. Never lie. Now put the audience in your boat. Put the oil. When you do that, if I goofed that morning, hey, it's his first day. And I use that same trait when I do a lot of speaking. I do a lot after dinner speaking, telling stories. I always begin by saying, I was nervous. If you can overcome anything if you're honest.
Yep. So you broke through on TV then in the 50s.
Yeah, a year later.
What role did Jackie Gleason play in your success on television?
Both television and radio. He was like a mentor. Jackie moved down to Miami in the early 60s, and he would come on my TV show, call into my radio show, and he was such an incredible star, and he was so huge worldwide. It was no one bigger than Jackie Gleason. And to have him befriend me, and because he liked me, was just a thrill. I mean, he pretty much, he didn't teach me. I don't know if he mentored. I don't know if mentor is the word. He was a hell of a, when I switched from Channel 10 in Miami to Channel 4, I went from the ABC affiliate to the CBS affiliate, and Gleason was CBS. And he did promos for me on an ABC station, plugging the fact that I was moving, which was like unheard of. So he did that for me, and he was kind to me. He was a very good guy. I was at his house, and the night before he died, his PR guy called to say he made a list of people he wanted to say goodbye to, and I was one of them.
Hmm.
So he had rather than mentor, impact.
Yeah. You were the color guy for the Miami Dolphins during their 70 and 71 seasons. Were you good as a color commentator?
I was great. Well, at first, I loved sports. I would sit in on baseball games during spring training. I would have been a sports announcer if I didn't fall into interviewing. And the Miami Dolphins came in 67, 68. And they weren't a very good team, of course, and they didn't have very good announcers. But then they hired me to do color. I was big in Miami, radio, television, newspaper. So they wanted to add some pizzazz to the Dolphins. So they had Larry King as the color guy. Rick Weaver was play-by-play. And we lucked into Don Shula coming, who became one of my best friends. And getting to do the color day, and then the unbeaten season, of course, is unparalleled in NFL history, still is. Yeah, I was a good, really good color guy. You know, you love sports, and I knew what I was doing. I knew the game. I knew defenses. I knew offenses. I would interview the visiting coach every week that came in, had a lot of information. I was pretty good.
There's a,
I've been a damn good sports announcer.
There's a story that in 1971, you were down to your last $42. What happened?
Forget that. I was out of work for a period of time, and I got $42. And I went to call the racetrack, and I love horses, and get to the third race, the third race. And I look at the form, and I like this horse. Looks pretty good to me. It's a filly running against colts. But I still gave it a shot, and the horse was Lady Forgo. And I look up, and it's 20 to 1. So let's say, okay, 20 to 1. I bet $2 to some to win 20 to 1, $10. Now I put it in exactus. I put it, it's a horse number 11. Lady Forley. So that means I got the 11 horse on top and on bottom with all the horses in the race. I have $2 left to my name, which I keep in my pocket. Another $2 left that I bet it on it to win. So I got it to win. I got it at exactos. I got it every way you can bet it. And I don't know why I like this horse. And the gate opens. One breaks on top to nine. Oh, I bet 11-1-9 my birthday as a trifecta. The 11, the one breaks on top, the nine breaks second, the 11 breaks third. They go around the track, the 11 passes the nine, the 11 passes the one. They come into the stretch, and usually one of these stories is, wow, it's so close. It wasn't even close. 11 wins by 5 lengths, the one beats the nine by 6. They come across the wire, 11-1-9, and I have, I think, $14,000.
Wow.
From being penniless. Now, I'm wearing a Pierre Cardin suit, one of those, that rage of the 70s, one of those kind of suits. Okay, all it had was a breast pocket. No pants pockets. Where do I put $14,000? I put it inside my shirt. I tipped the car guy coming my car $50. And I drove to where the Miami Dolphins now play. That was an empty lot. And pulled into the lot and counted the money. You know, the first thing I did was buy, one, a year's full of cigarettes, cartons of cigarettes, and paid my rent for a year.
Wow.
But I was cool, man. I could smoke, and I had a place over my head.
There you go.
I was saying they were fun days. They were sure interesting.
Yeah. You know, I grew up, Larry, listening to you when I was a little kid on the Mutual Broadcasting System. And I mean a little kid.
Oh, I love these stories. Yeah, I was a little kid. I remember you.
I mean, I was, okay. Larry, I was a talk radio junkie, even at a really young, I was like 10 years old listening to your show. And really? That's really the reason that I wanted to work in radio, was listening to you on late nights.
Oh. For you, complimented. Thank you.
For you, what's the magic of radio?
Well, it is, having done all media, print, written 14 books, been in movies, in television, of course, have my own TV show, and 26 years on CNN, but radio remains, it's my inner core. It is the most intimate of medias. It's the one that draws you in the most. It's not a background noise. Talk radio is front noise, not background noise. And it comes into, it's special to you. See, television's a broad medium. It has a kinetic value that radio doesn't have, and has a wider reach than radio, but what radio has that television doesn't have is intimacy. And I remember the great writer, the guy who hosts Rod Serling,
yeah,
was on my show, and we talked about the difference between radio and television. Rod Serling said, he said, if I'm a writer and I write a script that says there's a dark foreboding planet, there's a dark foreboding castle on the top of a hill. Now what will happen is that the story people will come in and draw me pictures of what this castle will look like and what they'll build it for television. For radio, all I have to do is say there's a dark foreboding castle atop the hill, and you could make that castle anything you want.
Hmm.
You could give it steeples, you could give it a flat roof, you could make it dark, you could make it light. And when I can do it with my voice only, because all I have is my voice, boy, there's nothing like nothing like radio. So I go back to old-fashioned radio before you were born. Great radio of the past, the Green Hornet.
Yeah.
Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, the Shadow. Grand Central Station, crossroads of a million party lives. And the radio was in my ear.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew everything. I knew Everett, all the announcers. I don't know if you were that way. I just was wackoed for radio.
Yeah, I was absolutely. And the other guy I listened to a lot and I ended up working with was Tom Snyder, who was also on late night radio, who was also just, like you, I think, just really authentic and real, and sat and talked about his day and what was happening in his life. I got that from
Tom died too young.
Yes, he did.
He pinched it for me when I had my heart attack.
I didn't realize that.
Tom did my radio show for two months.
He was a great guy. He was a wonderful mentor to me. I also listen to a lot of baseball on the radio, and I know you love baseball. Do you think baseball, people who love radio are more likely to love baseball?
Yep. It's part of the culture more. There's nothing like play-by-play on the radio. Nothing. The radio announcer who does play-by-play becomes a part of your life. Red Barber raised me. I'm very close friends with Vin Scully, who just retired.
Yep.
Scully replaced Barber when he was 21 years old. But I was raised on that culture of baseball in my ear. And Red, there's nobody better than Red. Red pictured Ebbets Field for me. And when I went the first time, I was 9 and a half years old. My uncle took me in to Ebbets Field. And the grass was so green and the dirt was so brown and the foul lines were so white. And all of that picture in my mind hit me as I walked into Ebbets Field. But I felt I knew it. And I knew it because of Red Barber. Red put me on that field. I lived every game with him. I could tell, in the old days, the end of the war, the baseball houses did not go on the road. They did the games by ticker.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd hear Red would do it. Dodgers are in Cincinnati. And the batter would be up in the top of the sixth inning, and it'd hit. And he wouldn't say anything. And you'd say to yourself, I know that tick. That's a double.
Yeah, that's an amazing skill. Yeah, I want to talk about
radio is. I don't know what radio is now. I don't know what network television is now. But I know radio is a mishmash to me.
Yeah, what's wrong with it?
Well, what's right with it? To the point that the only thing I listen to is sports.
Yeah,
I listen to sports talk on Sirius. Some are good, some are okay.
Yeah.
Are there any regulars? Where do you hit Frank Sinatra today?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. You don't get that kind of radio. Yeah.
Are you on the radio now?
I am, yeah. You were, in fact, Mason in Ireland, you were on our radio show a few weeks back.
That Mason.
Yeah, that Mason.
Mason and I, are you not together anymore?
Oh, yeah, no, we're still together. I just do a podcast on the side.
Yeah, that Mason.
Yeah.
What station are you on in L.A.?
ESPN, 710.
Oh, yeah, 710 Sports, yeah. Oh, that's you.
Yeah, that's me. That's me. Yeah, I just do this gig on the side, that. Larry. I like to do a little bit more in-depth on the side. We got you on the radio, and it was so much fun, and I'm such a big fan. I thought, you know, I want Larry King to come on my podcast so I can talk to him for a little bit longer.
I'm going to get a podcast, I think, in end of the month, end of May. That's the new revolution, right? Podcasting.
Yeah, it is. You know what's nice about it, Larry, is there are no... You don't have to do 22 minutes. You've got all the time you need. It can be long. It can be short. You don't have to worry about commercials. It's kind of old fashioned radio in a lot of ways. You can just have a conversation. Now, you know, I think radio is.
How do you make money? Do they sell commercials?
Yeah, they sell commercials for you. So there's like before our podcast starts, there'll be a commercial to start it, and that's how we pay for the podcast. And you know, a bunch of people listen, and we get to do kind of old-fashioned conversation on the radio, which doesn't happen very often anymore.
Does anyone? How do you know how many people listening?
There are all sorts of measurements through iTunes and Spotify and SoundCloud and Audio Boom and all of these different sites. They tell you how many people have actually listened.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to look forward to it. I'm supposed to do it once a week, an hour once a week.
No, oh, you'll be great.
This big company got in touch with me and said, why don't you do just you, no guests.
Yep.
And talk to people. It'll be fun. I used to do Open Phone America.
I know.
Which was a ton of fun that way. You know, When you broadcast for 63 years, Steve.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. You had to do something that was right.
Yep.
And I can't believe I lasted this long. Someone told me, I have the record, the radio record for hours on the air. But someone told me that I'm the oldest person with a regularly scheduled show. I'm doing a show now for RT and Aura.
Yep.
That's the oldest person on the air now. I'm 86.
Yeah, I was amazed. I'm amazed, Larry, how, and it's a little bit like Vin Scully, how sharp and crisp and thoughtful and congenial you are after all these years. Very much like Vin Scully. I mean, just... You know, legendary that you are this good at this age. It's amazing.
I just spoke to Vin a while ago. Vin's 93 now. He just got out of the hospital. He fell. He broke his nose. But Vin Scully's voice is an ineligible part of Los Angeles.
Yes.
You know, when they played originally in the Coliseum, he used to have to tell people to turn their radios down because they all brought portable radios to the game. The game they went to, they listened to Vin broadcast. Vin taught L.A. baseball. And Vin learned at the feet of Red Barber.
Yeah, yeah.
That was his mentor. Vin's quite a guy. He's an incredible pro.
Yes, he is.
You know, he. You can picture a baseball game when Vin Scully was doing it. And while they have very good, this young guy doing it now, Joe, is pretty good.
Joe.
And Charlie Steiner.
Charlie Steiner does a really good job, yeah.
On the radio but there's no Vin.
No, there's no Vin. There's no replacing Vin. I mean, the amazing thing about Vin is, you know, he could do a game and describe... during the breaks in the game, he would describe what happened on D-Day while he was doing the game. So he was both calling a baseball game and teaching history at the same time. Just, I don't know who else, I don't think anybody's ever been able to do that.
No, he learned that from Red.
Yeah.
What Red would do is tell you things about things other than just baseball. That Joe Garzillo worked with Red for a while, hated Red because Joe was a baseball guy, you know?
Yep.
And when they would have a rain delay, Red and Joe were asked to make conversation. And Red would embarrass Joe, like they're in Boston. And Red would say, what did you do today, Joe? Joe, I sat around a hotel room and talked to her. And Red would say, do you know all the things you can see in Boston? And he'd tell about Faneuil Hall, the history of Boston.
Yep.
And Garzillo was embarrassed, you know, that. But I worked with Red. Red came down to Miami, and his last years were protesting. He did public radio. But I worked, he did sports, and I did the interviews on a program called News Weekend on Channel 4, which was a super successful show. And so I got the thrill of having Red Barber throw it to me.
Wow.
He would finish his sports and then say, now, Larry, with that little southern twing, Larry. I got that chill went through my spine. I have Red Barber say that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what's wrong with my voice today, Steve. Must be is something in the air or the fact that I'm marooned.
Yeah, exactly. How is your pandemic going? How is your quarantine going?
How is that? You know, the only good thing about it is everybody's in it.
Yes.
So who do I complain to? I got my son living with me. My other son is with my wife, and they're marooned in Utah. It worked out that way. They were chance came to stay with me, and they were marooned.
Yeah.
I don't go out. I drive once a week. I'll go in the car, and chance will drive me around. It's a beautiful day in Southern California today.
It sure is.
I'll go on the roof of the building and get some sun. There's never been anything like this, and we'll never be the same again. I have no idea what the new normal is going to be like.
Yeah, how do you think it'll be different after this?
Well, people never shake hands again.
Yeah.
That's gone. They're going to be careful about, I would hope that the society becomes, people will be wearing masks for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't predict, since I got no basis for it, or no pandemic basis. I don't know. All I know is there will be changes. Life will be a little different. Maybe we'll love the things we love more than we love. Maybe we'll hold precious the little things that used to come easy and now come harder.
Yeah, you know, I think that'll be the thing. I think there'll be some gratitude in the world. We'll be grateful for things that we used to take for granted. And when those things come back, when we're able to go to a restaurant and sit and have dinner with friends or go have a drink or walk through a shopping center or a shopping mall and not worry about a mask, we're going to be grateful for those things, I think, when all this is over.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, that's a word we're going to hear more and more of, grateful. A word we didn't use much a little while ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll be grateful for the, I'm looking out now, a bunch of red flowers with the breeze blowing through them on a clear, beautiful day. And I just treasure life.
Yeah.
I've had every known illness in the world, by the way, Steve. If I was going to die last a year ago, March.
Yeah, let me ask you about that, Larry.
Doctor told my kids to go home.
At one point, I saw an interview with you where you said you actually thought about ending it all. Tell me about that.
Well, that was, I had a stroke in March of 2000. 2019, I had a stroke.
Yes.
Okay. And the stroke, the only impairment it left me with, movement in my left foot, So I walk with a walker or a cane. But that's the only thing it left me with, though, was I'll never get booted off. I just have a dropped left foot.
Yeah.
But during the course of that stroke, I was analyzed with leukemia. Mm. I had already had heart trouble. I had heart attack and surgery. Leukemia and diabetes.
Mm.
And respiratory problems. Had lung cancer, and surgery had cut that out. So they put me on when I had this stroke, and I'm in the middle of it. My kids tell me I don't remember anything, not a thing. My kids tell me they were in the ICU unit and there were people crying, and the doctor told them to go home because I wasn't going to make it through the night.
Hmm.
And for somehow, I made it. And one of my doctors, I have five different doctors, calls it that I have indomitable spirit.
Hmm.
I wanted to live.
Yeah.
And that indomitable, I never heard that term before, indomitable spirit kept me going.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a classic case for this virus. You got to be older and have
some underlying conditions, problems. Yeah.
Well, I have all the underlying conditions, plus the age. So, someone, that old Rocky Graziano story, someone up there likes me.
There you go.
I don't know. I will never know what it is, Steve.
Yeah.
I wish you have indomitable spirit.
Well, I intend to, Larry.
The reason I want to end it all is when I found out all these things. My son Chance, who's now 21, he saved my life because I said, I don't want to go on like this. You know, I'm hooked up. I was in the ICU, and I'm hooked up to all these little machines and needles, and like, I got a feeding tube and a breathing tube. And I said, Chance, I want to exit. I've gained everything I'll ever gain in my life. Love of children, love of work. Accomplished everything I ever wanted to accomplish. I'm done. I'm ready to go. And he just looked me in the face and tears down his eyes and said, you can't go. You can't go. And that kept me going.
Yeah.
Had he not been there, I don't think, I don't know how do you kill yourself, by the way? I'm afraid to jump out a window. There's no pill, is there? Is there a pill you could take to kill yourself?
No, I don't know of that pill. I don't know of that pill.
Oh, God.
Do you believe in the afterlife, Larry?
No, not at all. I have no religion left me a long time ago. I was raised Jewish and bar mitzvahed and all those things. But the more I got into interviewing, the more I asked religious leaders who had no answers for me. I'm in the Q&A business. So are you.
Yep.
I want answers. Okay. I never got there. When I would bring up or explain how God allowed the Holocaust. If there is a God, how do you allow it? And the answer is, we don't question the ways of the Lord. Well, I question the ways of the Lord.
Yeah.
I don't believe anyone's watching down on me. If I have indomitable spirit, I don't know where that came from. My wife and her whole family, they're Mormons. They totally believe in an afterlife. I mean, they handle death better than anything. That's the one thing people who believe in afterlife handle death well. Because they think they're going somewhere. I don't think I'm going anywhere. I don't think there's anywhere to go. I think this is it. I don't know how it all began. You know, people who believe, they'll look up at the stars and they'll say, this can't be all there is. This can't be all there is. And I always say, why not? Why can't this be all there is? What is this? The Communist Manifesto? This is all there is. Yeah. Maybe this is the universe and we are in it.
Yeah.
So what do you think about life on other planets? Okay. I know there are other planets. So okay, maybe a different form of life. Okay. But do you think you're going somewhere?
I do. I do. I think You know, my philosophy is that everything's part of one big thing, and I think we just fall back into the pool of it all when it's over. And it's life after life after life. That's my belief. That's what I think keeps me going.
And the question is, why don't you remember a previous life?
It's fair.
So you've had a life before this, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. What was it? Where were you? What country? What kind of person were you? Were you a male or female?
I don't think it hasn't come back to me in that way yet, Larry. Maybe at some point it will. I just feel like there is something, and I feel like there was something, and I feel like there will always be something.
Well, I will say that I hope to hell you're right. I want to live, and I'd like to, if I had a choice, I'd like to live forever. I'd like to do that thing where they freeze you and then wake you up.
Yes.
And they cure the diseases and keep going on.
Have you looked into that?
My wife said to me, oh, yeah, I did that. The problem with it is you have to put aside like $500,000 life insurance. Okay, and then they have to make sure that they tend to it well. Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know. But I did look into it. I've written materials on it. But I do know that my wife said to me, you know, if you live, why do you want to live 200 years? You're not going to know anybody. I said, I'll make new friends. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I want to live forever. Yeah. But I don't know that I'm going to go anywhere when I die. So in lieu of that, Steve.
Yes.
In lieu of that, you die and go somewhere. I'll take living. I'll die. you'll be happy when you die because you'll see what your new life is like.
Yes.
I don't want to take that. I don't want to roll those dice.
Well, I will see you. I will see you down the road. I can promise you.
Steve?
Yes?
I got to run. I love working with you anytime, any place, anywhere.
You bet. Hey, Larry, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Great talking to you.
All right, there you have it. Larry King, who, you know, I said it in the interview, and I really do mean it. When I was a little kid, I would do two things. I would listen to baseball on the radio. I was growing up in Toledo, and I listened to the Tigers on WJR with Ernie Harwell. I listened to the Indians with Herb Score in Cleveland. I listened to the Reds with Joe Nuxall in Cincinnati. I listened all the way to the White Sox with Jimmy Pearsall doing games. And then I listened to talk radio. I listened to Larry King on the Mutual Broadcast System. I listened to Tom Snyder, who I later got a chance to work with on the Late Late radio show, which was a thrill for me. He was a tremendous mentor for me. And as you heard Larry say, when Larry was out with his heart attack when he was doing the CNN show, Tom came in and filled in for him. Tom was a broadcast legend as well, and as Larry mentioned, passed away from leukemia just a couple of years ago. Did not expect to get so philosophical with Larry about the end of life and what happens afterwards. I'm not sure if I sold him on my theory or not. Also love the point at which he recognizes, oh, Mason in Ireland. That Steve Mason, classic stuff. I love Larry King, great guy, and really happy that he was able to do the podcast. Hey, please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. Appreciate that. Coming up for you soon on the podcast, Sue Kalinske will rejoin me as my podcast partner. Barry Sonnenfeld, director of the Addams Family movies, the Men in Black movies. He was also the DP on the Coen Brothers movies, their early ones, Blood Simple and Raising Arizona. We've got him on the podcast. Hawk Koch, who is the producer of Heaven Can Wait. The one time I saw my Los Angeles Rams win the Super Bowl, and Primal Fear. He went on to be the president of the Motion Picture Academy. He was also the assistant director of my all-time favorite movie, Chinatown. So we'll get into that. Plus, Suzanne Summers is going to talk about her new book about anti-aging. And I'm excited about this. Deepak Chopra is going to join us on the podcast. So a really good guest coming up. Really appreciate you being out there every time we do one of these. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. We'll see you next week for an all-new episode of Culture Pop.